A pasta salad pulled together with tahini. A quick bread full of dates. How about a rock-solid working family weeknight recipe for perfect shawarma? These delectable creations are what happens when you set a home chef loose in her Midwestern kitchen with the spices and recipes of her Lebanese-American upbringing.
Anytime I walked into my kitchen, there was always just the smell of freshly chopped parsley and cilantro sizzling with some garlic on the stovetop. And I mean, it was just, it's just a culinary heaven.
Yumna Jawad is better known on the socials as the Feel Good Foodie. She's a wildly successful Instagram and TikTok chef. Her recipes would be recognizable to any Michigander, but a lot of them have very unique touches, and all of the recipes are so warm and so comforting. Cheeses, sauces, potatoes, noodles, spices, and so many other beautiful ingredients. Imagine kofta meatballs all lined up to bake with a glaze of tahini, couscous chicken soup for those cold autumn nights, and an orange pistachio French toast casserole, because show me the Midwestern kitchen that does not have a plan for a French toast casserole. This is Stateside. I'm April Baer. My guest today is Yumna Jawad. You'll find her online as the Feel Good Foodie, and she is publishing a brand new cookbook of that same title. You write about the eight staples of the Mediterranean kitchen: sumac, tahini, pomegranate molasses, rosewater, seven spice, za'atar, dates, and labneh. There's so much transformation, though, in flavor, you know, just entering one of these into some, you know, some much more commonly known recipes, or doing something like throwing pistachios in the pesto. You know, I've been on a focaccia tear lately, but I had not even thought of throwing za'atar on there until I saw it in your book, and it's everything.
Oh. It really is. And it reminds me of menaish that we grew up with, which is made with like fresh dough. And it's basically a flatbread pizza, but you put za'atar with olive oil on top of it. And so it's an ode to the menaish that I grew up with, but with this like Midwestern Italian style, like focaccia, if you will. And so I just love these little swaps. And sometimes too, it's surprising because I started to learn how to use some spices that feel like they should be in cooking. Like cinnamon, for example, feels like it should be in sweets, but we use it a lot in savory recipes as well. And right. So it just lends, like I'll add it to my rice, for example. When I'm done cooking vermicelli and white rice, I'll throw in a little bit of cinnamon to it, and it just like revives it all together and just gives it the sweetness to it, you know? And one of my seven staples, for example, is sumac, which is a lemony, it's really hard to replicate the taste of sumac, but it's more like lemony tartness with a pepperiness to it as well. And so what I do is I actually throw it in a mixed berry crumble that I make. So very simple Midwestern style mixed berry with a crumble topping, but I also throw sumac in there. So it adds this tartness to it that just makes it so unique. And what's cool is that if you don't have these spices, they're not accessible to you, everything is very easily substitutable, but all of these spices are easily to find on Amazon and easy to find, you know, even in grocery stores these days, which feels amazing.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, Yumna, is it true that the whole experiment with cooking on socials, that this kind of began for you in teaching yourself how to cook?
Yes, it did. So I grew up in Sierra Leone, Africa, and, you know, living there, a lot of things were just had to be made from scratch. So my mom would be in the kitchen for hours making her own yogurt, making her own tomato paste from scratch. But I wanted to be as far away from that as possible. I just wanted to enjoy the whiffs
right.
Walking by the kitchen. So when we moved to the United States and I was 11 years old, I started noticing my mom, you know, making slight upgrades to our like everyday meals. And so she was starting to cook the Midwestern way, just like, oh, I can just throw some chicken on a skillet. But I found her, you know, finding fun, like quick ways of making things like upgraded with Mediterranean staples. So she would throw some seven spice when she would make spaghetti, for example, or she would, you know, throw some hummus in a pasta sauce that she was making. And I just loved all these little swaps. She was leaning into these conveniences of just living in the Midwest and just having yogurt that's already made and not having to make her own. And so when I finally started my own family, I wanted to cook the way my mom cooked, but I knew that I only had most nights 30 minutes or less to make dinner. And so I found joy in just finding ways to honor my culture and honor these recipes that I grew up with in faster, quicker ways that felt more accessible. So in 2013, I realized I love the way my mom cooks, but at the same time, I also want to cook, learn to cook new recipes as well. And so I wanted to teach myself these authentic Lebanese recipes and faster ways of making them. But I also wanted to learn more about like quinoa, which I didn't grow up eating quinoa, for example, or I wanted to learn more about how to make things like overnight oats that were trendy in 2013. And so I set out on an Instagram page that my husband made up the name of. He's like, you should be called the Feel Good Foodie. I'm like, that's perfect. So he made up the name and I started to teach myself how to cook openly. And I would just basically say, today I learned how to cook this, quinoa. I made tabbouleh, for example, but I made it with quinoa. And it's really cool about quinoa is that it's adding protein to your salad and doing X, Y, and Z. And I was really just sharing with people, like, here's a picture of what I made, and here's what I learned about this ingredient. And I would call them like feel good, like it's like a feel good, like what did I call it? Something like that, feel good ingredient or something. And people didn't really care as much about my journey or what I discovered. They wanted the recipes. And I'm like, I was shocked by that because there's thousands of blogs online and free recipes all over the place. And I was shocked that anybody would want recipe from me because I was learning how to cook. Like, who am I to give people recipes? And little by little, I would say, well, this is how I made it. And I adapted it from this website. And this is what I, did with it to change it. And they kept asking over and over again. And before I knew it, I started sharing my recipes online. And then, 11 years later, here comes the cookbook.
The rest is history, yeah. We need to take a quick break. More in a minute.
Support for Michigan Public's Stateside podcast comes from Lake Trust Credit Union, working to empower financial well-being for Michigan consumers, businesses, and communities. Committed to financial solutions and advice to support people and families. More information at laketrust.org.
Support for the Stateside podcast comes from Kalamazoo College, offering a personalized education that combines critical thinking, curiosity, and creativity. Committed to preparing students for meaningful careers that make a positive impact on the world. More at kzoo.edu.
Okay, girl, we need to talk about your potato salad. It is a revelation. I have to say, as an almost lifelong Midwesterner, my dark secret is I don't like mayo. And the Greek yogurt that you sub in, I feel like this is something I've been waiting my whole life to learn. How did you come up with that idea?
I just always have Greek yogurt on hand, and I never liked mayo as well. I didn't grow up eating mayo either. And so when I first started having it, it felt just a little bit like too strong on in so many recipes, especially when you're having a salad, which to me feels like it should be something lighter and just more fresh tasting. Mayo didn't feel like it added freshness to it. So one day I experimented with just adding some Greek yogurt to a dressing, a very simple dressing, and just whisked it in. And nobody knew, nobody can tell that it was. And I think the way I was able to mask it was with things like Dijon mustard, adding a little bit of honey, and there's, spices that you can add to it and make sure that it's salty and enough pepper in there. And nobody can really tell, especially once you add all the other ingredients. So it became a staple of the way I make a lot of salad dressings. And so I had to do it in this potato salad in the book because potato salad is so iconic in the Midwest, but at the same time, it's not always, it doesn't always leave you feeling good. And this one, I think, will leave you feeling so good.
Your recipe calls for fried capers. What happens to the flavor of capers when you give them a little sauté?
It mellows out a little bit, like the brine cooks off a little bit, and then the capers end up getting a little bit crisp, and it's just magical. In every little bite of it, you're like, ooh, there's just a little bite of heaven. In
Right.
every little kiss, the potatoes are creamy and just buttery, and then you've got these like salty, tart, and crisp capers, and it's just such a just a beautiful union of flavors that is a magic in your mouth.
Yumna, Michigan is kind of a unique space because a lot of us do have access to, in the kind of ingredients that you're talking about, certainly in Southeast Michigan, increasingly up north and in West Michigan as well, which West Michigan's where you live. Have you noticed patterns in the way those two flavors blend, those we typically associate with the Midwest, and those that are a little more traditionally Mediterranean?
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, I think we all want to feel like we're getting enough protein in our meals. But at the same time, one thing that I felt that was missing from a lot of meals that I grew up with in the Midwest when I started eating here was I felt that we were missing a lot of fresh vegetables and a lot of color in our meals. And so crunch and freshness and tartness as well, and something like that just makes it fresh and vibrant, which I feel is what, you know, a lot of these meals get added to. But at the end of the day, like you said, some of these meals are so accessible, even if you wouldn't even realize that they're Mediterranean. When you look at the mjadara recipe, for example, it's rice, onions, and lentils. And, you know, those are the three basic ingredients to make this recipe, but also add ground cumin to it as well. And so with literally four ingredients that mostly I think everybody has access to, you can turn something that feels so humble and so simple to something that just tastes like completely different and very comforting as well. And the way I livened it up was with, you know, the salads on the side and cucumber yogurt sauce drizzled on top of it as well. So I think what feels approachable, I think, is that when you look at the list of ingredients, you realize, oh, I have these things. Or even like my lemony grilled chicken recipe, you look at that and it's like, oh, I have chicken, I have garlic, lemon juice, olive oil, I've got these spices. Like, but then when you combine them together and the method of cooking and the way the ingredients come together, that's what makes them feel just a little bit different than, you know, what you might grow up with in the Midwest.
Do you want to hear a crazy Midwestern mijadra story?
Yes.
When I learned how to make it, I went bananas and was trying all kinds of variants. And your version of it is really great and, you know, very durable. It does not call for this, but I found a recipe that suggested tossing the onions in cornstarch before you fry them. And I
Oh.
tried it, and I'm telling you, that is Durky French fried onions, the things that we put on green bean casseroles at Thanksgiving. And I was just like,
Oh.
how? It totally blew my mind.
That's amazing. I need to try that. That's not a bad idea. Oh my gosh, that's going to be my next thing. Okay.
There are so many recipes in here that are a real joy to try, from all the soups to a truly flavorful veggie burger, which I'll be eternally grateful to you for introducing me to. But do you feel like there's a showstopper recipe in the book, something that you're especially proud of?
I'm really proud of the yogurt marinated chicken in the oven. I feel like a lot of people didn't know this concept that you can marinate your chicken in yogurt and make it not only more flavorful and more tangy and just give it a different flavor, but also more juicy as well because it locks in that moisture. So I've been a huge fan of just marinating my chicken in yogurt for so long and grilling it, air frying it, baking it, roasting it, oven pan frying it, like all different methods of doing it. And that feels to me like one of my favorite recipes in here. And I think it's one of the recipes that I think people will turn to really quickly as well, because when you look at the ingredients, it's literally chicken, yogurt, garlic, and a few spices, for example. And so very, very approachable and simple, but it looks gorgeous. And it's just one of those meals that I just know families are going to love.
You had a post recently that I just really appreciated where you were talking about everything that went into making this book happen. And I think it's really easy for those of us who scroll and scroll and scroll to just look at beautiful videos and think, oh, you know, production really isn't that hard. But you talked about how, you know, the process is just different. And there were things that you had to try for recipes that you hadn't tried before. Do you mind saying a little bit about whether it's much different figuring out how to do a clip that you're going to post and the process that you had for the book?
Absolutely. So when it comes down to social media, I feel like the first 3 seconds of the video is everything. And so you have to grasp people's attention in first 3 seconds. So I have to think about these things that, you know, is it a loud sound? Is it a visually appealing, you know, cherry red tomatoes with melty feta within the first 3 seconds that gets people's attention? Is it me seeing, you know, an intriguing comment, like, did you know they ran out of feta cheese because of this recipe in Finland? You know, and I don't know if it was true. It was like a rumor, but I said it and it got people's attention. And, you know, and there's a little bit of like gimmickiness and clickbaitiness that has to happen because we're just starving for people's attention. People's attention is so thin and it's so widespread. And in order to get their attention, we have to kind of do these things or say these things to get them to watch the video. And it's the same thing on my website as well. I have 7 million page views per month on my website. And the way I get majority of my traffic is through Google. It's through people searching for a recipe for a potato salad. And when they land on that potato salad, they are expecting certain ingredients and you have to give them what they're expecting. So with social media, you have to give them something surprising and exciting. With the website, you have to give them what they're expecting. And so with the book, I got to be a lot more creative. And I was thinking about just like, if I was to make, chicken in the oven, like what kind of flavors excite me? It was more of like a love story to myself of like the dishes that like I grew up with and I was excited about and the flavors that I really want people to try. Not because if people hear the word sumac, they're like, well, I don't know what that is and I'm not going to try it, or if people are Googling a recipe for a mixed berry crumble and they see sumac in it, they're not going to make it. But if I explain to you that, hey, getting this one spice that costs $4 that you can use in 8 meals is really going to transform them X, Y, and Z way. I think it could be fun to just kind of join me on this culinary journey. And it feels just a little bit more exciting. And it's more of a storytelling journey that you come along with me on. So it's a way more of a creative process for me. And honestly, more enjoyable than the videos and the
Right.
website. So
Preach.
I absolutely love the process of it. It was really enjoyable for that reason.
Yumna, it's been so much fun talking to you, and the book is just fantastic. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much, April, for having me. I really appreciate it.
And that's the Stateside Podcast. I'm April Baer. Today's pod was produced by Laura Weber Davis, our executive producer. Other producers on our show are Mike Blank, Ronia Cabin-Sog, Mercedes Mejia, and April Van Buren. Our podcast editor is Rachel Ishikawa. Music for the pod comes from Blue Dot Sessions and from Audio Network. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back in your feeds tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Hi, I'm Rebecca Williams.
I'm Lester Graham. We've been working on a big project about Great Lakes birds called the Bird Connection.
It will look at ducks and trumpeter swans,
egrets and herons,
and piping plovers. Yes!
We'll discuss what we've discovered at a Michigan Public Issues and Ale event,
including how some problems for birds are problems for people.
It's at Arbor Brewing Company in Ypsilanti the evening of May 21st at 7.
You can register at michiganpublic.org.